PHI Files, the Ultimate Eagles Podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garofolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The Big Interview.
All right, let's do it. Let's talk some Eagles. Birds 24/7 at Philadelphia Magazine. Brandon Lee Gowton joins us. You find him on Twitter at Brandon Gowton. That's G-O-W-T-O-N. Brandon, obviously, we got to start here. Carson Wentz, the performance you saw out of the rookie quarterback, what's your overall takeaway on his first performance in a regular season game?
Well, it's about as good of a performance I think you could really expect from a rookie quarterback, especially one who wasn't really even going to be active on game day, 8 days ahead of the game on Sunday. You know, the Eagles were obviously going to enter the season with Sam Bradford as their starting quarterback, but they moved to Carson Wentz on short notice, and he looked really good in his debut. I mean, he was throwing accurate passes. He looked poised. The moment really never looked too big for him. He was going against the Browns defense, of course, that wasn't too great or anything, but still, you know, a very impressive debut for a rookie.
Overall, I mean, you talked about it. He was really sort of thrust into this role. You know, what did you see out of training camp and out of the preseason that you think made it so that it could be a success for him, knowing that, you know, just a few weeks ago, he wasn't expected to be the starter?
Yeah, I think you just what we saw in the offseason were those flash plays where, you know, you saw his raw talent, his ability to push the ball down the field and be aggressive and take shots and do things like that, which led to the touchdowns he threw on Sunday against the Browns. But you also hear about how the organization talks about Carson Wentz. They're very high in him. They feel he's very smart. He works very hard. And you've seen that pay off. I think, you know, this first game was a testament to his work ethic and to his intelligence, being able to audible in and out of plays, kind of read the defense and make things happen. I think, you know, it was an impressive debut, and I think the organization obviously is feeling good about him right now.
When you talk about the things that he still needs to improve on coming out of that game, obviously a big win, but at the same time, what did you see that you say, okay, he's going to have to get this straight going into week number two?
There's still some accuracy issues. We saw him overthrow Jordan Matthews in the end zone by a little bit. A few other plays where the touch still needs to be a little bit refined there. Some other times, too, where he's probably holding on to the ball a little too long, standing back there in the pocket and not getting the ball out fast enough. But when he did get the ball out fast, you know, he did look really good. You know, so you're seeing the potential, but you're also seeing, you know, rookie mistakes that need to be cleaned up.
Based off of that, it could, when we talk about Carson Wentz, could he have been given a better gift than the fact that his opening games are against the Browns and then the Bears? I feel like those are two defenses that if you're trying to build some confidence for a rookie, those are two that you want to face.
Absolutely. And even with the Browns angle, it's funny, not just because of their defense, but also because of the fact that, you know, the Browns had the chance to draft Carson Wentz with the number two overall pick. They obviously traded to the Eagles instead, and later, I think one of the Browns executives kind of said that part of the reason why they didn't pick Wentz is they believe he's not going to be a top 20 quarterback in the NFL. I don't really see the benefit of saying that, especially when he goes out and he has this kind of performance against your team in the season opener. But yeah, you know, you look at the Browns defense, not too great. Chicago's defense, obviously, also not very stellar as well. I do think that's a good point, that the fact that Carson Wentz gets to come in here, and it's not like they're asking him to face Denver and Seattle and Carolina right away.
Do you get worried with the receiving side of things? Jordan Matthews, who you brought up a minute ago, obviously finished with a great game, 114 yards, a touchdown in there as well. But occasionally you can get nervous when you see one receiver so dominating in terms of the targets because you can get worried that a quarterback has tunnel vision. Do you have that worry, Brandon?
Not quite. I just think, you know, Jordan Matthews is clearly the best wide receiver on this team, so I'm not surprised that Carson would want to target him a lot. And, you know, as the season progresses, you know, he'll get the chance to kind of to work with these guys and develop more of a chemistry. It's actually interesting that, you know, Wentz would go to Matthews so much, considering that Wentz missed most of the preseason except for the first game with a rib injury, and Jordan Matthews missed the entire preseason with a knee injury. So it's not like the two had a lot of time to work together, but despite that, you know, they connected early and often against the Browns, and I think you know, Carson's going to look to get some of these other receivers involved. You have Dorial Green-Beckham, who's still kind of learning the playbook, and who Doug Peterson said they're still kind of working on small chunks of it with him, so they're not fully rolling him out yet. I think as the season progresses, we'll see him get, you know, spread the ball around a little bit more.
A lot of times on teams, we're trying to find that number two wide receiver, you know, in terms of somebody to take the pressure off of Jordan Matthews. But in this case, Brandon, is that number two really Zach Ertz that's there to take some of the pressure off of Matthews?
Yeah, he's a big, reliable target, obviously, working in the middle of the field there. Not a guy who's going to make people miss in the open field by any means, but he runs good routes. For the most part, has good hands. He had an incredible one-handed catch. And actually, first Carson Wentz's first pass attempt, yep. Or first career reception, rather. Ertz is a good target there in the middle. It's kind of hurts the Eagles now that Ertz has a rib injury here and could potentially miss the Week 2 game. But if he's healthy and he's there, that's obviously going to be one of Wentz's big targets.
Brandon, is the Eagles' defense that solid, or are the Browns and Robert Griffin just not up to par? What do we make of the fact that they held them to just 10 points?
Yeah, it was a good start overall for the Eagles' defense. There were times where the Browns kind of just missed plays. There was a play right after the Eagles gave up that big catch to Corey Coleman where the Eagles actually had triple coverage but somehow just didn't locate the ball, and RG3's pass was underthrown. RG3 had Andrew Hawkins kind of wide open, or at least he had beaten his cornerback in the end zone, and RG3 just overthrew it. And there were other times on Sunday where the Browns were dropping wide open passes. So there's still some things, you know, the Eagles defense has to work out. The fact that the Eagles only held them to 10 points overall, and with some of those points coming in a questionable referee decision, in the red zone at one point, it's a good first performance for the Eagles on defense.
One other thing about Carson Wentz, and we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but in terms of the pressure that he saw when the Browns came after him and were blitzing, was frankly when, from a, you know, a rating and a QBR and all of that standpoint, that he actually excelled. You talked about the poise that they had seen out of him and the confidence that they have. Are you surprised to see that out of somebody that came out of such a small school, or was this just something they knew that they had when they drafted him?
I'm not totally surprised because, you know, Carson Wentz is a little older for a rookie. He's 23. I think Jared Goff is only about like 21 or so. So he's a little older than average. He has that maturity when you hear him talk in the press conferences and everything. Even going back to that first preseason game where he played against the Buccaneers, you know, it's only preseason, but still you saw he didn't look rattled out there. He never looked like he was really nervous or the moment was really too big for him. No real jitters. So I think, you know, coming out on Sunday, you know, it's a different situation when you're opening at home and, you know, the game is real this time. But still, you know, I think the poise was there, and that's what the Eagles expected. Doug Peterson said he wasn't surprised by it, and I don't think it was too shocking either.
How much of the credit, obviously, like the Bears game coming up is a Monday nighter, so, you know, you're going to be talking about being in the spotlight for Carson Wentz. How much of it, Brandon, do you credit with the fact that his head coach is a former quarterback and therefore can kind of put himself in those shoes?
Yeah, the Eagles have really put an emphasis on that, and not only Doug Peterson, but also Frank Reich, offensive coordinator, another former NFL quarterback. You look at John DeFilippo. Also a guy who played quarterback in college and things like that. So he has experience as well. The Eagles have really been touting that trio of Doug Peterson, Frank Reich, and John DeFilippo. And it seems like, you know, it's going to pay off for Carson Wentz here. I think those are the kind of guys you want to surround him with, guys who, you know, not only have the coaching prowess, but also have played the position and kind of communicate with him like that. I think players have really said that helps them too. I think even, you know, before Sam Bradford was shipped off, he had talked about how having those former quarterbacks in the room really provided comfort to him. And I think the same thing goes for Wentz.
He's Brandon Lee Gowton, Birds 24/7 at Philadelphia Magazine. But most importantly, you want to keep track of what's going on with the Eagles. Follow Brandon on Twitter. You can do it at Brandon Gowton. That's Gowton. Brandon, really appreciate the time here on the PHI Files, and enjoy Week 2 against the Bears.
Thanks for having me.
Brandon with us. Stay tuned. The coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. And as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. I mean, let's go back to Jeff's history. Yeah, when they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s, he didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had two losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem, because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, maybe you can play that formula where he was only 17 to 35, but he had two interceptions. If you're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula, you got to run the ball and can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners' defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know, because the Rams' offense was basically so inept. We're going to have to see how it pans out. It's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks, notwithstanding even the offensive side. Obviously, what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good, but we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they indeed go on the road? And it's a tall task, because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton, and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people, looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I've on record, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if they can stay healthy. And that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown. That offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams. Let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good, physical, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team. But they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense, but I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They too. Okay, now you got to follow up with it, because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good, and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show, Game Day First, for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man, we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. You know, for them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slot. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think it's going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for a rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, you know, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did or 45 times like Dak Prescott. But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they looked like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas. Although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. You had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division, but certainly that bodes well for Kansas City, if nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, Coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points, a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints, at home in that dome, you can, you know, check off pretty much the entire league. You know, this guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it on two-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, a resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. and his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints defense continues. They're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know once again they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing talk about, you typically particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a two-point play. Or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans on the road that late in the game against that crowd, and oh, by the way, against the Hall of Famer like Drew Brees, I kind of like my odds with the two-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hands.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy, and you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home, so maybe the situation, bared out for that one, and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson, and everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person, so that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that and you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson, so how is that possible? Well, you saw on display. Now, that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. Maybe one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if this is going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's Overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false? The Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo.
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake, Jimmy.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins. Just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it, I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. There's going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday, even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD, just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time, I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nate.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.